time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us. It's Monday, September 2nd, Labor Day here in the U.S. And we do have people listening from all parts of the world. You know, why do people listen to our U.S. mortgage program from other parts of the world? We got a lot of countries supporting the U.S. mortgage industry. And we're honored to have them as listeners. If you want to send us a text message or a LinkedIn message, do so. I love hearing from you. Love the opportunity to bring you what's going on in the mortgage industry. We're coming to you live, not recorded, but live from Austin, Texas. You know, we focus here on Lickin' on Lending mostly, almost exclusively on mortgage news. But, you know, with all that's in the news right now, we're mindful of the things that are dominating the news. For example, the shootings up in Midland, Odessa area of Texas. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the victims and the families there. I mean, it's just such senseless killing. And like our governor said, he said, we've got to do something about keeping weapons like that out of the hands of criminals. Man, heart goes out to the families impacted there. That just grabs you. Then also, I want to say, I woke up this morning, my thoughts and prayers on what's going on with Hurricane Dorian. And, you know, it's now a Cat 4. It's moving at 1 mile per hour over the northern island of the Bahamas. I can't even imagine what's going on in the Grand Bahamas right now. A hurricane at 160 to 180 miles, gusts up to 180 right now. That is sitting there moving at 1 mile an hour over you. It's kind of like, when is this nightmare going to end? It's just our thoughts and prayers go out to all those impacted already by Dorian. And those that no doubt will be in the days ahead. Two of those being impacted is our very own Alan Pollock and Les Parker. They both live in the Ponte Vedra Beach area of Florida, just south of Jacksonville. And so I was talking to Alan earlier. He says, I'll try to make the podcast, but we are going to be I'm boarding up and getting ready to leave. And we're leaving ahead of the mandatory. I haven't talked to Les yet. I'm sure he and his wife have headed out of town. But anyway, we focus on the mortgage news, but we really keep so many people in our thoughts and prayers that are being impacted by these latest events. You know, one of them is our sponsor, Black Knight, whose headquarters is in Jacksonville. So many of their employees are being impacted by this hurricane. And we do pray for their protection and that life gets back to normal. Anyway, we're pleased to have you with us. We're going to focus now back on the mortgage news. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we are grateful to have you as our listener. Who's we? Well, it's Alice, Andy, Alan, Joe. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. The hot topic guest, can you believe it? My good friend Dan Smith from Compliances was able to get Jeremy Windham of the Alabama State Banking Department, a regulator, to come on the podcast. And then Dan asked Thomas Hennen of Calix Software coming on. We're going to be talking about RegTech. There's all the different types of technology. Well, we've got RegTech we're going to be talking about in the Hot Topic segment. And there's actually some reasons you want to listen to it because there's some hopeful, good information there. I was very grateful that Jeremy had the time, took the time, invested the time to come on board. And we did pre-record it so that we could have them all approve it, the content. They support that we do so with the LAL, especially being the Alabama State Banking Department. He approved it. And so we're going to be sharing that a little bit later in the Hot Topic segment. We are proud to be a part of the Industry Syndicate. You can check it out, industrysyndicate.com. There's a large group of us that are podcasters. You know, I want to give a shout out to Amy Moses of MERS. Love Amy. You know, it's a funny story. Talk about it every once in a while. Every time I see Amy, she is just she's an Iowa farm girl. She looks like she's a sophisticated city kid, but she's an Iowa farm girl, and I just have so much. We were mad when I first met her, and, you know, it's just fun interacting with Amy. She's brilliant. She's fun to dialogue, very dynamic. And then we're talking. She goes, you know what? You know, I'm from Iowa. She said where her dad went to school. And I said, well, I went to school there. Turns out he is in my Norwegian class. Yeah, sure, you betcha. I took Norwegian for my foreign language. You can only do that in Iowa, folks. So anyway, news from Black Knight. Mitch gave us an update on some news. After falling through the second half of the last year, tappable equity saw its second consecutive quarterly increase, hitting an all-time high. Get this, equity that is tappable. That means cash-out refinances, folks. $6.3 trillion. More information, check it out on their website. Could go into a lot of information here, but kudos to Black Knight for doing a great job. And after 16 months of declines, falling interest rates helped improve the National Affordability Index as the annual home price appreciations rose. So guess what, folks? There's no slowdown. We've got a link to all these articles on our website. Check them out in our show notes. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors. They are the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. If you're not a member of MAA, Mortgage Action Alliance, go to the website, mortgagebankingmba.org, and find where it says Mortgage Action Alliance. Sign up for it. You do not have to be a member of the MBA. Have your voice be heard. Also, the Community Mortgage Lenders of America. Thrilled to have CMLA a part of our podcast sponsoring it with us. And also Black Knight. Again, we talked about them, located in Jacksonville, Florida. They have an actionable intelligence platform delivering data that drives growth, reduced costs. Go to blackknightinc.com. Open Mortgage here in Central Texas, here in the Austin area, a leading buyer of reverse mortgages and home of some of the top LOs in the country. Finastra, they're located, you know, in Lake Mary in Orlando. Hope they're going to be fine. Talking to Marianne, who helps with me in setting up all the ads on this. You know, there's a lot of things, the Fusion Mortgage Bot system, it automatically addresses compliance and all that good stuff. But you know, the app that's really getting the attention is their POS, their point of sale on the front end. And it is doing a great job of competing with that other mortgage company out there's technology. Check out Finastra. Go to their website, finastra.com. Look at all that information. And also go to our website, see the video there of the interview. Also, Resex Warehouse Lending. So good to have them. They're a division of United Bank. Ken Jones, love that guy. And his team of professionals, warehouse professionals. We talk on the interview that we did on July 22nd with Ken about the importance of your warehouse lender, the relationship. And we actually talked about why these annual reviews that we do, it's so important. Then also, I want to say a special thank you to the Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. Both are creating opportunities where you can connect. These are co-ops where you can connect and have meaningful relationships with lenders and vendor members. Velma, efficient mortgage marketing email platform. Good friend Brent Embler there, as well as Knowledge Coop. Ken Perry and his amazing team does a great job providing fun, easy training, as well as Vidyard, the home of a powerful video communications technology, enabling you to connect with your customers. And then AISS, folks, AI is happening. And if you're going to do it, go with the best. That's a Conversica power-driven system. But AI Assist is what works with lenders. They make that whole complicated process of AI much easier. Go to Roman Venfield's interview July 15th and help them market the business. Also, say a special thank you to Alice, Andy, Alan, Joe for their contributions to our podcast. Rob Van Rampworth taking the day off here in at the NBA. Grateful for his weekly commentary. But Les Parker, before he packed up and left his house, got to higher ground work inland, took time to give us this TM Spotlight, a week's macro view of the markets. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by Ainsworth Advisors, because Jen Payne's got us questioning. Where is the love? He said, she said. Where is the love? If trade wanes, then rates fade. But if sweet tweets find meat in a deal, then rates reheat and relegate lenders to defeat. China's tax revenue is on track for the first drop since Mao's great leap forward that killed millions. The drop cast a cloud over the country's future as the combination of low birth rates and aging population will squeeze the domestic fortunes. Will Xi Jinping come to see success in the world means keeping one's word? Where is the love? These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter. That's all we got.
Oh, yeah. I like that. Good job. That's all we got. I'm cutting my fingers and going to the groove here. I love that. Good job, Les Parker. Check out the tmspotlight.com website to sign up for Les Parker's daily free newsletter. Mortgage loan officers, you got to have that tool. But I don't understand it all. Well, you start reading it, you will. Get into it. Don't be intimidated. It's good stuff. That's how I started 35 years ago, listening to Les's comments. I didn't understand him initially, but that he's the one that gave me the understanding of the secondary markets. Joe Farr with a rate update. Good to have you with us in hot Central Texas.
Hey, Greg.
Appreciate you being live, friend.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Brexit. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little later.
Yeah, of course, markets are closed today, and so there's nothing to update on that. Although over the weekend, as we all know, U.S. implemented another round of tariffs, and China retaliated. And looking at the Dow futures, earlier today was showing down 199 points, so it might lead you to expect an open tomorrow that would be negative for stocks and maybe good for bonds. That's usually the way it's been rolling. So looking at last week, Dave, we had a really good week for mortgage rates. MBS prices, which is what most rate sheets are built off of, showed an increase of 38 basis points during the week. And what that's really saying is if you had a loan or a customer ask about a certain rate and was given a discount point quote on that rate, that same rate would be 38 basis points cheaper for your customer after last week. It was also a good week for stocks. The Dow rose 774 points. Of course, trade war with China was the driver. You know, there were really harsh rhetoric going on from both sides. And, you know, sometimes the comments would indicate that there was a positive movement in the expectation for trade. And then sometimes it was just the opposite. You know, Friday ended on an optimistic note. But then over the weekend, we saw the actual implementation of the threatened tariffs. And so it turned a little pessimistic over the weekend. Dave, the economic data that came out last week was really not a big factor because of all the focus on trade. But the data was kind of mixed. Durable orders were disappointing. Those were July durable orders. But then more current surveys on consumer confidence and consumer sentiment. Consumer confidence was very strong.
Yeah.
Whereas
love
consumer
that.
Sentiment fell a little bit. So we'll focus on the strong one, the confidence numbers. The second quarter GDP was revised a little lower, just by a tenth, and so not a big movement. Pending home sales in July fell a lot, but when you compare the actual numbers to, like, June was a tremendous month for pending home sales. And so you're comparing July to a very good month, and even though it showed a big drop, it was still a pretty good level of activity in July. So I wouldn't take it as a big negative for the housing industry. Core consumer price, the personal consumption expenditure came out. That's an inflation indicator. It showed inflation remained at an annualized rate of 1.6%, so steady inflation. But it also showed the data in that information showed that consumer spending was very strong in July. So, you know, the Fed pays a lot of attention to that. Inflation and strong consumer spending should bode well for stocks. And not bad for mortgage rates. You know, talking about this week, and that's where I'd like to see what your thoughts are on Brexit. You know, the China trade talks will continue to have some impact on the market this week, but really the focus, I think, will shift to Brexit because there is a lot going on there.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know their politics well, but I know that right now there is a law in Great Britain that it will leave the European Union on October 31st. Deal or no deal. Boris Johnson, the prime minister, is hoping to negotiate a good deal for Great Britain. He has in the past been a hardliner and will exit, is not worried about exiting without a deal. In order to improve his negotiating positions, he has announced a recess for Parliament to begin September 9th. It's going to go through October 15th, which effectively takes Parliament out of the discussion as it relates to Brexit before October 31st. You know, there are people in Parliament and pro-EU people who are opposing this move, and they're hoping to implement legislation that would either extend the deadline, or maybe both, extend the deadline from what is in law now, October 31st, out to January 31st, and to establish a law that would say that there could be no Brexit without a deal. And so Boris Johnson's position on that seems to be that those kinds of things will hinder his ability to negotiate with the European Union, and so he's fighting that. And since Parliament's going to be in recess starting September 9th, this week is really all they have left to try to get this stuff done. So really do expect a lot of headlines coming out, Great Britain and the European Union as it relates to Brexit. And Dave, looking at the economic events that are coming out this week, there's some pretty significant events coming out. ISM manufacturing and construction spending come out on Tuesday. ISM services comes out on Thursday. Non-farm payrolls comes out on Friday. 158,000 net new jobs are expected. No change in the unemployment rates expected. But maybe the more important things that will come out deal with the Fed and Fed speakers. There are several Fed speakers on Wednesday. Chairman Powell speaks in Switzerland on Friday, and I think that's 12:30 Eastern time, where he's going to talk about economic output and monetary policy. By then, he will have seen the July jobs report and ISM manufacturing and services numbers. And you know, when you look at the market, it's really expecting a lot from the Fed. If you look at the CME Group's expectations for future Fed funds rates, there's a 100% expectation that there'll be a 25 basis point reduction in the Fed funds rate in a September meeting. And then if you look out another meeting, so in October, there's a 50-50 chance, according to the CME Group's analysis, that there'll be a Fed funds rate cut, another Fed funds rate cut. And then in December, there's a 1 in 3 chance that there'll be a third Fed funds rate cut. So, and you add all that together, it's a lot of help coming from the Fed is expected by the market. So whatever Chairman Powell has to say on Friday could have a big impact on those expectations and could be market moving. So I would pay close attention to that Friday speech. Sorry, I didn't give you a chance to talk about the Brexit stuff, but it is really a difficult time.
For our listeners, those that are watching interest rates and trying to figure out lock or float, we're going to be having a lot of volatility as a result of this, or I suspect we will, as a result of, you know, are they, what's going to happen there? And I mean, love your thoughts on that, Joe. I mean, they obviously got to have a system that they're using. They can use your old company. So what they use, the MBS Quote Line, give them a shout out. We still use their system and appreciate them letting us do that. But there's also other ones, Bear Habib's system. I love MBS Highway. I have about that as well. Love the updates, the video updates, and the phone calls that Barry puts out. But, I mean, what are your thoughts on Brexit? Is this, I mean, seems like this has been dragging on and on and on. The one question, text to be said, is it ever going to happen? Is it really going to happen?
I mean, I think it's going to happen, but it's just a messy, it's going to go down a messy path. And as those things change and as the uncertainties about how it's going to break up from the European Union grow, concerns about the impact of a no-deal Brexit are going to affect stock markets primarily, and bond markets are going to be affected by that as well. So I think we've seen, as surprises come, to the extent that, you know, no-deal Brexit will have a negative impact on Great Britain's economy and possibly the European economy, and certainly that's going to spill over to the U.S. economy, the chance that that happens as it grows could be negative for stocks, but it could be good for bonds and therefore mortgage rates. So intraday movement, like you just mentioned, is not something you can anticipate, but you can certainly react to, and you can react to it quickly if you have the right information.
Yep. So true. You look at corporate profits as a nominal, or as we look at GDP, and you look at some of the graphs that are out there in the marketplace. Really interesting where we're at. Corporate earnings are up. I mean, it's looking good to be here. We're the fiat currency, de facto fiat currency in the country. So I think we'll do well as you look at all the other stuff. But it's the volatility that eats the mortgage banker's lunch. And it's that kind of volatility you need to pay attention to. Joe Farr, thanks so much. Looking forward to seeing you here again soon. You're going to be out in our neck of the woods this holiday, I know, later today. So love to see you.
All right.
But I'm working, bud. I've got preparing for a big meeting I've got on Thursday. So I'm going to be hunkered down, reading a bunch of stuff. Anyway, love to see you. Appreciate it so much. Thanks for being here with us, giving us a live update on this holiday. Appreciate it. Folks, we're going to take a quick break with Scott Gordon from Open Mortgage talking about the science of sales.
Scott Gordon here with a bit of sales science.
I'm sure that many of you are aware of the principle of reciprocity, which is a social rule stating that people feel obligated to repay what another person is giving them. This need is hardwired into our brains. Think of the old adage, the more you give, the more you get. By giving customers something small for free, the customer is much more likely to reciprocate in a subconscious attempt to repay the gift. So how can you use this knowledge ethically to boost your business? The first step is to determine what you can give. What would be of value? A trinket given for a completed app or an inquiry? Shift your thinking to something intangible and far more valuable. Knowledge, experience, or time. That is your gift to your customer. In an industry full of disinformation and a society where everyone is rushed, sharing your knowledge garnered from experience goes a long way. In the end, you're not selling anything. Your conversations are an opportunity to gift your time, attention, knowledge, and experience. Shift your perspective from the chore of talking to potential customers to the giving of a gift. It will give you insights on those discussions and will probably bring you more business. If this sounds too good to be true, it's not. It's just the science of sales.
Like that segment. Good stuff. That gives us the science of the market. We have Joe adding to that. Now we have Scott Gordon with the science of sales. Good job. Appreciate it so much. Alice Alvey, appreciate you dialing in on this holiday. And I thank you again for hosting the podcast while I was gone. How are you doing, Alice? You do anything special on this holiday, you and Andy?
Well, actually, we were just out fishing in West Virginia. So we were fly fishing at these beautiful cabins in the middle of nowhere. And, of course, it's stock fishing, and you just walk out your cabin. And we had a blast. I think Andy netted
That's
a good 30. I got maybe close to 20. So I'm pretty happy. That was a real fun time. But, you know, back here Monday, catching up. But West Virginia is a beautiful state. I recommend it highly.
It is. That's so beautiful. We have to hear about that spot. You have to put we'll put a link up for that fishing hole that we go to. Yeah, that's awesome. That's good, 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 good. Well, I know you're always providing us good updates on what's going on, but one of the things I want to talk about a little bit later on, why before you hang up and leave us today, is I want to talk about leadership, Alice. And I know I'm really excited about having Bill Cosgrove come on, as we're going to be getting into e-leadership this fall. We're going to get into a whole discussion because, Alice, I love your thoughts on this, but every single consulting issue, when we're called to come in on an issue or on a problem they're having, a struggle they're having, which is oftentimes the reason you call a consultant, is we're stuck, we need help. I was talking to Andy. He and I had finally caught up for barbecue on Friday. It was so much fun. He was hoping to join us today. He's not going to be able to, but we both agreed that all points down the center of the hub of every issue that's out there is leadership.
I completely agree. As Mortgage U, and as you know, we did projects together, but we also had many of our own consulting projects that we did for all types, credit union, community banks, lenders, you know, brokers. Nobody's off the hook on this. And most of the time, you know, we like you said, you were called in because someone thought they had a procedural problem or something's inefficient. And there were many times you go through the process, you go, you know what, your process is efficient. Your people have good ideas. The problem is the management and a lot of times it's what we would call under management.
Yep.
And really not setting expectations, proper goals, really giving people a good framework to get their job done. So anyway, I completely agree and look forward to that. We have several programs at Union Home. We actually have launched a major initiative on a future leaders program that actually runs for 8 months. That is it's fabulous. It's we're very proud of it. It's one of our cornerstone programs. But then we also have, you know, level one team leadership, first time manager, then a second level for the next group as they need to advance into from managing to leader. So it really is a multi-leveled approach and plays right into my topic today, Dave, because one thing I wanted to touch on, since it is Labor Day, is diversity and inclusion, because this is a big part of growing the leadership at your company. And the Mortgage Bankers Association happened to send out today, you know, to sign up to be a member of their group. For everybody listening, you should take a really strong look at this, because when you think of diversity and inclusion, it can vary on what part of the country you're from or what your background is or where you've worked as to what comes to mind, but it can be even age, right? You know, are mm-hmm. the millennials included in your group that you need to grow? Or is it a particular race, ethnicity, male, female? There are all different ways to say, I want to make sure I'm diversifying my workforce, which in turn diversifies my customer base. And the Mortgage Bankers Association does have a good website that you can go to kick off what those platforms, what the core pieces of that platform should look like. And one of the most important things I love is the statement that's in here about really what the word inclusion means. And there's a quote in here from Verna Myers that says, diversity is being invited to the party. Inclusion is being asked to dance. And it is such a great way to phrase that, to make sure that you're, as a company, you've got everything that starts from hiring through how the individuals are given opportunities to develop into leaders, and then also from there, being able to participate in projects. So you can, every company has folks who come up to a senior manager and say, I'd love to have a women's group, or can we do something with Empower, or I would love to set up a diversity group, or this group, or that group. And that never necessarily gets put into action. People nod mm-hmm. and say, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. We should get to it. But you know what? We're trying to close a lot of loans right now. There's always seems to be a reason for it to take a back seat. So as Labor Day is about, you know, we all get a weekend now because a lot of people got together and said there has to be focus on the labor force and focus on helping them grow, have it represent our community, and help it best serve our customers. So today's the day to go. We're going to start this fresh when we all come back. And fall's a great time to kick off projects. Really get some trajectory coming into January that you have a full-on diversity and inclusion program. So that's my thoughts for today, Dave, on Labor Day.
That's really good. That's excellent, excellent. And we'll give the MBA a shout-out because they have a summit on diversity and inclusion. That is, well, I'm maybe looking at an old one. I know there's one coming up here. I just realized this is from 2018. I Googled it as you were talking. But there mm-hmm. is one that's coming up. So check out the 2019, not the 2018 one. It's usually in Washington, D.C. I know it's coming up because we have several clients going there. Do you know when that is, Alice, or off the top of your head?
Actually, I just had it pulled up here a second ago. Sorry, you can probably hear my dog barking in the background.
That's so brown. Good.
yes, but look on their website. There's lots of things I would want you to check out. I'm sorry, I don't have the date handy in front of me.
No
they
problem.
Have regular webinars as well. So a lot of times when you say, well, what does an employee resource group, right? So ERG is an acronym. Every company should just know what that means. So you might have a women's employee resource group, but an employee
That's
resource
really
group is how you start this. And you can leverage the MBA webinars and events as a way to have something. And then let your group decide what they want to have a part of it. We were amazed as to how many of our partners are involved in various volunteer activities that then fit well to, as a resource to put within the employee resource group for other partners at the company to understand how to get help. Here, there, for personal issues, finance issues, other business issues, sales, you name it. And you're leveraging all the internal resources that you have, and an MBA can help you with a basic platform to kick that off.
Check it out. I'm Googling around here trying to find the dates. We'll get those up on our website. But it's a great shout-out, Alice. I really appreciate you doing that. Have a great rest of your Labor Day holiday. Appreciate it so much. And when you get a minute, you want to come back and listen. You got it. Good.
Well, I think it's really their Empower. The only one that's on their website right now is the Empower MBA Summit for Women in Real Estate, which is October 26, 2019, part of the national conference. So as far as
Good.
The event may have passed just recently, because that's the one on the MBA website right now.
Good. Thank you so much. Appreciate
You're
it
welcome.
So much. Good, good, good. Say hi to Andy. You got a special husband
Thank
there.
You.
I just think he's Love that guy.
I do.
Love your husband. He's a good man. I can tell. See why you love him so much. Anyway, have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
I'm a little jealous that I tell him I'm a lousy fisherman, so I won't hurt the lake stock. Give me the website. I got to know where that's at. I want to go there. My wife's a good fisherman. All right. Have a good one. Happy Labor Day to you. Appreciate
you
it so
too,
much.
You too, and happy Labor Day, everyone listening.
You bet. Looking forward to have Bill Cosgrove on the Leadership Podcast when we have them coming up, a series of leadership podcasts. And yes, I have Lickin' On Leadership, a separate podcast already, recorded an interview with Bill Cosgrove of Union Home Mortgage. Go listen to that. Alan was going to try to make us. Andy was going to try to make it. We're not going to be able to have either of them. But so for those of you that are listening live, go ahead and make sure you check out the download on our website of our podcast or on the Blog Talk Radio website. We're going to be uploading. We'll put all the ads in there. But for those that are listening live, we're going to jump right into the Hot Topic segment. I'm excited to have on the program today a good friend, Dan Smith of Compliancees. Dan and I have known each other for a number of years. Dan also was the moderator host of an important compliance summit put on by Compliancees recently in Fort Worth. It seems like it was recently, just yesterday. It may have been actually a couple months ago. But Dan, it's good to have you joining me on the podcast today.
It's a pleasure, David, to be here with you.
I want to introduce our two other guests. I'll have you do so. You know them well.
Yeah, thanks, David. So along with me on this call are Tom Hennen, who is the Director of Strategic Partnerships with Calix. Tom and I have known each other for quite some time, and Tom is instrumental in his role. He comes and kind of can speak to the vendor side of things for the initiative that we're going to be talking about here today. The other individual here is Jeremy Windham. Jeremy is a regulator for the state of Alabama. He's also the vice chair of the MMC, which is the Multi-State Mortgage Committee. And so Jeremy is the one that's speaking to the kind of 2.0 version of moving forward, if you will, on a more efficient examination process. So I think we've got collectively a
good representation.
A good representation, that's right.
Yeah, Thomas, Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us today, and I really am excited about it. And kudos to you, Jeremy, for coming on. It's trying to get a regulator to come on the podcast and talk. It takes a little bit of coercion, so I don't know what photos Dan has, but he's pulled this off, and I'm just really honored to have you here, Jeremy, and really do appreciate it. I want to start off with this question. And it is, why is RegTech important from a regulator's perspective? We always talk about things from a lender's perspective, but I'm really interested, Jeremy, getting your perspective on why RegTech is so important.
Thank you, David, for having me on, and thanks, Dan, for the introduction, and thank you, Tom, for being on board as well. But RegTech is important for states because we have to evolve. We have to be able to improve our efficiency as regulators. We have more that is actually a responsibility of the regulators that we're now pushing out to all states, such as financial condition, compliance management systems. We're looking at board management oversight. And then we have this thing called loan review. And loan review is what typically takes 90% of our time in conducting an examination. We can look at approximately 5 to 10 loans a day, manually flipping those loans. So having a technology in place to actually help us target our review on specific findings is what the states need in order to improve our efficiency so we can pass those cost savings on to our licensees or the industry. And RegTech is a solution to what we have to overcome as far as efficiency. We have a directive from the NDSC, which is the Non-Depository Supervisory Committee, which is basically the commissioner superintendents, telling the MMC, is who I represent, that, you know, we have to improve our efficiencies. And we have to still meet a standard. We can't just say, okay, we're going to just review 5 loans and that be okay. We have to examine a good sample of loans in order to meet the sampling requirements as laid out in the exam guidelines. So we have to do that. Still continue doing that. Plus, we have to do these other things that some states may not be used to, is financial condition, board management oversight, and their compliance management programs, and not take forever. So that is the point of RegTech.
That's not taking forever. That's such a challenge. I think, you know, a good way to start off, Dan, is for you to define what RegTech is.
Oh, thanks, David. Yeah, RegTech is really, in our industry, it's a subset or a sibling of fintech that applies, you know, automated and new processes and technologies, you know, such as AI or blockchain to manage, you know, regulatory and related challenges in a more efficient and compliant manner. It's certainly received a lot of buzz lately. It's really kind of part of, you know, what people call the digital transformation or Industry 4.0. Yeah. I should point out that research in market.com had indicated in a study that spending on RegTech they expect to more than double in the next 5 years. Kind of broad solutions include things like preventing money laundering, helping with identity management, dealing with different regulations like GDPR, helping with data or record management. And there are other industries outside of the mortgage that also are dealing with RegTech. Obviously, in our space, it's really RegTech is about taking complex compliance law and adhering to it in an increasingly efficient way.
Thomas, jump in and give us any thoughts you want to add to that.
Yeah, I think from the, I kind of take things from the perspective of the originator, when it comes to RegTech, first it's an elephant in the room. It's kind of like my dad always said, it's like the hog with the wristwatch. You know it's out there, but you're not really sure what to do with it. I think our originators that are in this industry today, and I think, frankly, for all time, really, by and large, want to do the right thing. It's just sometimes real hard for them to communicate that. And so RegTech is a way, I think, a standardized way to, keep them in compliance, keep them up with, again, doing the right thing. And I think what's really important is that we try to make their lives easier. They're not trying to hide anything. It's just a matter of, it gets really, really difficult when you do fall under some sort of an audit, and they're necessary. The angst that's created from that isn't necessarily from maybe what you've done in the past. It's just the collecting of that data and getting
Exactly. Great point.
Yeah. I think it's a great opportunity. Yeah. It's a good opportunity out there and I'm just really thankful that, the regulators are kind of pushing this initiative to say, okay, we're making this really hard for the folks that have to report the information. And it would be really nice if we could all come together and provide an easier way.
Yeah, Jeremy, I love the idea of trying to get so much support in there because, fast, efficient, making this as painless as possible. An audit's an audit, and who enjoys that? But, it is essential to make sure that we're in compliance. I'd like to have you talk a little bit about, in this first question here, you were talking about policy procedures, which is the compliance management, as well as the financial condition, which is the liquidity and the asset quality, and the board and manager. Talk about some of those, if you could give us some insights on how RegTech can help you with that, and might some suggestions you might have to those in the technology community.
So right now, David, those areas that you just covered are going to actually be topics that we have to review in order to meet a standard to be accredited.
Yeah, minimum standard.
To be accredited by CSBS as a state. And so other states can take our examination product and use it as their own. So those areas that you just covered are not actually what I'm talking about as far as RegTech helping us out. What has taken us the most time in our examination, about 90%, is loan review because we manually.
Oh, okay.
So when we're doing that and we're spending that much time on loan file flipping, some of these other very important topics that you just mentioned kind of get pushed to the side because we're focused in on consumer protection and consumer harm. Well, we could actually be looking at board management and how they actually operate and eliminate a lot of those possible consumer harms if we're able to get to that level. So those three things that were discussed, compliance management, financial condition, board management oversight, are things that we're going to have to be added to our exam process. And to keep our exam process from becoming extremely long and tedious, what we want to do is utilize Compliance Eases product, Compliance Analyzer, run the loans through the system, help us target on loan file selection just those specific areas that are flagged, and then we can shift our focus and our time to those other areas that we need to
focus. That's a great point. Yeah, and I'm thrilled. I love Compliance Eases, and yes, I'm a fan of Compliance Eases listeners, so this is I guess you could say it's an overt promote. But let's talk a little bit about, what the states have done to accomplish a faster review times. It is a review, Jeremy, is a distraction to a company who, especially at these times, having record volumes because of lower rates we've had in a while, the pipelines are bulging, and the last thing they have, quote-unquote, time for, but they have to make time for, is this audit. What are you guys doing to make it faster?
Just to kind of give you a history, David, about 10 years ago, CSBS, the Conference of State Bank Supervisors, which is the state's association, State Commissioners Association and state run, we put out a bid to at large for this software, a software that could provide this kind of information. And back in that time, what we were really looking at to do is find a software that provides finance charge calculations on interest-only payment option arms, because as you can imagine, that calculation would sit if you sit down and do it, it takes you forever. So
right.
We really needed a program that could actually put in the numbers and spit out finance charges, and they'd be accurate within that $100. So that was the goal in 2008, 2007, when this initiative first began. So what happened between that point in time until 2014, we ran 800,000 loans through Compliance Analyzer. Everything was working great. We were comparing initial disclosures to final disclosures. The system was being used more and more every year by more states. Everybody was becoming adoptive to this system, learning, they'd have training. It was really moving forward until 2014. So I think we all know what happened in 2014.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, well, let's for those that talk about that, I mean, from a compliance perspective, I mean, the big thing you're talking about is obviously TRID. But talk
right.
about that. What kind of wrench did that throw into this whole process?
Well, it went from a simple comparing initial to final disclosure to comparing your initial to the next disclosure to the following disclosure to the following disclosure. And you've got to capture all those data points.
Yeah.
And you've got to capture all of those fields in order to make appropriate calculations and make sure that they're within their change circumstance tolerances and not violating those rules and regs. So it really complicated a software program, so much so that when we were conducting examinations, states would be looking at the system, and the system's still doing the same calculations that it was prior. It's just that data points were not available in a lot of those circumstances, and therefore, examiners were seeing fails, so a tolerance violation. Well, examiners would pull the file and then manually flip through and find that change circumstance and then say, okay, the system must be broken. This system is
yep.
telling me it's a fail. So I went and pulled the file. I looked at it. It's not a fail. So examiners start pushing the system to the side. The technology that we've invested time and money in has been pushed to the side, and now examiners are back to the old style of manually flipping loans. And
wow.
it's just that's where we as the MMC finally stepped to the side and said, listen, we've got to figure out how to fix this issue. And the issue is that data points just are not getting transferred to our licensee, the lender, in order for them sometimes to pull a complete LEF that we're using to test. And that's what basically led into these initiatives that we're looking at right now, or that we have done, and that we're continuing to do right now.
Dan, jump in on this. This is, I mean, there's, you guys have brought a huge solution, not only to the regulators, but as well as to the industry to work on this, especially when the launch of TRID. But this has been a moving target. TRID was not exactly clearly written. How have you been managing this?
That's a great question. And so I think, you know, what's been interesting for us, and so working with compliancees as I have for many years, is, you know, what I think sort of is unique about us is we only do automated compliance. So, I mean, we are a company that specializes in automated compliance. And, the way that has taken shape over the years is we receive input from a variety of external parties, be they regulators and outside law firms. We certainly talk with industry participants. We also have our own internal legal team and, of course, product teams. And it's been really an iterative process and evolution of, you know, basically anything that can be quantifiable is within our footprint. And so, you know, many years ago, back in 2001, when we, you know, kind of pioneered automated compliance tools, we really had easing the process for the lenders in mind. That process has evolved, and as it is in essence a very, you know, highly sophisticated idiosyncratic calculator, it's something that has provided utility outside of the lenders who are using it at the point of origination. It's been something that is useful to determine how compliance has fared by post-origination standards, so the secondary market, investors, and regulators. So with something like TRID, certainly, you know, the biggest challenge has been, you know, there certainly are questions of interpretation that had to be worked through, you know, things like moving, tracking the fee changes and changes circumstances at the fee level and things of that sort. But it's also been, you know, just a challenge of getting at the data or getting the data that's been needed in order to do a complete review. And we're tapped on the shoulder by the regulators to provide assistance for them in the form of our tool. And that's been a very positive process or positive experience, but rewarding and enriching. But it's really been couched under, you know, with getting complete and accurate data, how does that translate into information that can create efficiency both for lenders, but also, as Jeremy's described here, for the regulators as well, so they can do their jobs.
Yeah, and Jeremy, kudos to you guys going out and putting out a bid to the software to find the best solution out there. And, you know, I think you did.
I would agree
that Compliance Ease is that, and I'm thrilled that you guys are bringing that. But we talked about TRID. Tom, I don't know how you as a software developer has been able to stay on top of all the changes since then. But, we could do a whole podcast, the challenges on that. But I want to go back to Jeremy just real quickly and talk about what the states are doing now today. And I understand that there is quite a bit of yet underway to make this process even, I keep saying less painful. I don't know if that's the right word, Jeremy, but
let's try
talk about that.
As efficient as we possibly can.
Yeah, more efficient. Yeah, let's do that. That's a better way, a more positive way to put it.
So we're learning something. I mean, we learn something new every day. Who would have thought a guy from Alabama would be knee-deep in rec tech? So that's the first thing we learned. The next thing is we needed to get everybody who had any interest in this in a room and have a meeting. We wanted them to tell us the good, the bad, the ugly, everything that they had as far as experience with Compliance Ease. We had to figure out what was happening between the systems of record and then our system of compliance that we were using. So we asked, we call it an LEF summit. We started that in Dallas almost a year ago. And now we've gotten to the point where we had a meeting last week in San Diego for our third summit, where we're bringing in regulators, lenders, industry reps,
outstanding
management companies, the attorney groups. We want everybody who is willing to sit down and listen to what we have to say to be there so that they can walk away with an understanding of where we're coming from as regulators, why this is so important to us, why we have to move forward with this. And we're learning so much every day. And it wasn't until a face-to-face meeting with one of the large LOS providers that, you know, I didn't understand why we couldn't get all the data points from a very large LOS provider. And when that information leaves them and goes to a doc management company, they lose control of the data points that Dan was talking about, and they're not transferring the data points back into the LOS. So even within the largest companies out there, you may not have a complete record on an electronic format. So in a flat file, a PDF file, absolutely. So when we go and ask a lender for their files, I don't want you thinking that lenders don't have complete files. They do, as far as record maintenance goes. But when we're asking them for electronic file formats, they don't have it in that setup, so they can't generate this LEF, or at least not a complete LEF that gives us all the information we need. So we have pushed these summits out. Now we're meeting one-on-one with large entities, large providers, Calix, we're meeting with other large LOS providers, and now we know we have to meet with doc management companies because they're crucial to this resolution. We have to have them involved with this resolution, getting data back to the LOS providers. So that's what we're working on right now.
That's amazing.
Maybe it might be helpful for our listeners as well if I, you know, take a step back and describe that. Jeremy used the term LEF and LEF summit. So that's really a file format. It's a licensee examination file, or basically a loan examination format. And essentially, it's a flat file of the loan data that is necessary for a regulator to be able to, you know, upload that into the compliance tool and receive the analysis, which serves as a diagnostic tool for them. And this isn't something that's brand new, although it may be new for a lot of folks on the that are listening. It was something that a format that we at Compliancies created at the bequest of the regulators years ago. But just having the format out there, you know, wasn't enough, and so, you know, certain entities created it. Certainly, TRID complicated it, but it was, you know, kind of inconsistently used. And so there were, you know, requests from time to time, but, you know, a lot of regulators weren't requesting it, especially in light of TRID. And so what I think, you know, Jeremy's speaking to is that the, you know, the regulators are, you know, wanting to really move towards efficiency in the kind of the e-examination world and are looking at, you know, how do we, you know, do this in a very kind of collective, collaborative environment that brings together all the different parties. So that's why, you know, these meetings are so important with the doc vendors and the LOS providers, as well as industry participants and lenders participating, regulators hosted by, you know, with representation from federal and state. The meetings have been hosted by the CSBS, to throw another acronym out there, the Conference of State Bank Supervisors. And really, I think it's been enlightening to kind of hear the different perspectives. But in that sort of symposium format, that is where I think I'm seeing progress from where I sit. And again, just all in this in calendar year, as Jeremy said, there's been these LEF mini summits, and they've been in Orlando and Fort Worth, and then just recently here in San Diego. As a byproduct of that are a series of working groups that are taking the form of conference calls and, you know, and then some one-on-one face-to-face meetings as well. So I think there's a lot of moving parts now where sort of all are, you know, invited to kind of tackle this as an industry issue.
Thomas, it's got to be encouraging, maybe frightening, to be invited to in San Diego to attend one of these meetings. But I just applaud Jeremy and the whole team, what the states are doing, to get your input. Were you there, and how did that meeting go for you?
You know, I wasn't at the San Diego, but I was at the one in Fort Worth, and it was great. Frankly, it was my first, well, you know, they just started these up, which was fantastic.
Right.
I love that there's some stick-to-itiveness to it. You know, there's follow-up to it. You know, I think Dan kind of alluded to, you know, LEF 2.0, you know, kind of got forgotten there for a little bit for whatever reason. You know, they keep us real busy in development, having all these mandates that are put out by the different, especially the different government entities that are out there. You know, so they're always putting us in a position to keep improving, you know, our software, or keep developing to our software for the needs that they have. So putting this to the forefront, I think, is really a good thing for putting attention on something that is of interest to our users, for sure. It's just been a matter of, there's some, as it was earlier alluded to, you know, there's some data points that are not typically native inside of the system of record. So from a development standpoint, you know, that's what we're working to accomplish, is get those things in there so that we can provide a better and better, more of a pass, less of a fail, you know, for the regulator when they're looking at it. I don't know if we're going to get the holy grail where you just simply push the button and it's all the way done, but certainly that's the goal, you know.
So Tom, from your experience, since Calix is an important, you know, partner here, an important player in the LOS space, maybe you can expand on that from the standpoint of having, you know, two different systems, because I think it's interesting about Tom's perspective here in this area is that you have, you know, kind of different approaches to your two systems, and both are, you know, sort of in progress.
Good question. Yeah.
Yeah, we do, and it has to do with the architecture of the systems. You know, Point has well over half the brokers that are out there use Point. So it's, you know, it's a tried and true system, but the architecture on that is, you know, it's been around for a little while, so that presents some challenges at times. So from a development standpoint, you know, what we're doing here is, to crack the nut, is to, you know, build the data points, which then are going to be able to provide that file directly from the LOS. So that's one approach. We're picking that development back up again as we get a little bit of a breather from the GSEs with the, you know, the big news out there is that they've kind of put a little hold on the URLA as far as timing goes. FHFA is kind of reevaluating some things. And I don't know that the timelines are necessarily changing, but it sure seems like they're pushing things back a little bit. So it gives us a little bit of time to go back and devote some more time to the LEF. But also with those changes to the new IRLA, it's going to require adding, again, some more data points. So, you know, it's kind of a round robin here. But, we'll manage through it. That's what we do. You know, we've done it very well for all these years. And then as far as PATH is concerned, you know, that's one of our newer entries to the market. It's an enterprise-level LOS. It's cloud-based, you know, and it's a rule-based, role-based, multi-users can be in the LOS at one time. So really more of a, you know, ideally suited for that medium-sized player, the banker that's out there. It's got fantastic audit trails. It's got a really nice, tight integration to Compliance Ease already. And so Compliance Ease here in the last couple of weeks have really put their thinking caps on here and said, okay, how can we make this easier for not only Calyx that has a good integration, but any of the LOS partners that they have that are out there to maybe utilize the integration that's in place. And so what they're proposing and what we're investigating right now is something that they're, I don't know if this is a branding thing, so I don't know if I can say this, Dan, maybe, but I'm internally kind of calling it the Easy LEF, right? So for your Compliance Ease customers, the people that are already utilizing Compliance Ease, there's going to be a way forward with the integration that's already in place, whereby that data comes through to Compliance Ease, and then they produce the LEF. And then the mechanics of how that comes back, does that go back through the LOS or not? That hasn't been worked out yet, but we're in discussion about that. And then for the non-Compliance Ease customer, what are the mechanics to allow for that tool to be utilized for the purpose of generating an LEF? So that's a really exciting, fairly new development in our discussion with Compliance Ease, and it just shows that they're, you know, they're always thinking here forward, which is really great. So I don't know if that answered your question, but that's what we're working on.
Gives us a little more perspective on that. Jeremy, I want to come back to you. I heard this kind of, we'll wrap it up with this question, but there's two happiest days of someone who gets a bank charter, the day they get it and the day they burn it. And it's because of all the regulations involved with the banking part of it. So independent mortgage bankers have been spared a lot of it, but that's not the case anymore. The examinations are getting almost as intense as what the regulated institutions. Talk about what are some of the other options you're seeing out there, so that you're not having to spend weeks and camp out there forever.
Well, I mean, so the option is to have a solution from our industry partners through the working groups that I really want to mention really fast. There's three working groups. One's a gap analysis working group, basically finding out the information that we're missing and why.
Mm-hmm.
There's a gap analysis working group comparing LEF data to MSMO. And then there's another working group that will begin once we find out what all is missing, that may work around developing a skinny LEF or a smaller version of the LEF file, because we understand as regulators that we do have multiple size players.
Yeah.
And multiple size players the larger players have more influence on the market and can cause things to go really bad, or they can cause things good. So, you know, when we talk about a lot of Thomas's clientele or mortgage brokers who are maybe one state entities, this technology is going to begin at a multi-state level. That's the group I'm a part of, the Multi-State Mortgage Committee.
Yep.
Can we use it on a single state level? Absolutely. But our goal is to make sure we're covering the larger portfolio so we have a great sampling size. And we understand there's no holy grail either. I mean, I would love to have the holy grail, but there's no way we're going to be able to fit everybody into a pie here and say, this is how we're doing it. It's going to be a simple, easy button and hit it and go. We know we're going to have to adapt as regulators. We've done a poor job of that in the past. When we started seeing these things in 2014 and 15, and they were causing us distractions and pushing the system to the side, we should have been raising more issues back to our licensees, our lenders, and even to Compliance Ease saying, hey, why is this happening? And we failed to do that. So there's education that has to happen on the regulator side to get them back on board. This 2.0 push is going to happen. I don't know exactly when yet, Dave, but it's going to happen when we get our regulators back on board and say, okay, here's the system that we need to use to do loan review. And once we have that in place and we know what will happen when we use certain LOSs, when we use certain doc providers, we're going to have all that kind of laid out. That's what all of this is about.
Good.
Is a learning experience from a regulator's perspective to say, if you're using Company X and they're using Company Y's doc management, expect to have these failures, but here's the specific documents you go and pull instead of requesting the entire loan file, because that defeats the purpose of Reg
yep.
Tech in itself. So
in itself, that's good. That's right. I applaud you, Jeremy, and the rest of the state examiners who are going to be listening to this, for your efforts to make this as reasonable a process as necessary. It's a requirement. I mean, it's there. You guys exist to make sure that abuses do not get happened, that bad actors are not allowed to exist. And so I applaud you for your efforts to not only meet that, but do what you can do to make this as efficient as possible so that this can get accomplished and everyone can go on and be about their business. So, Dan, when is the next Risk and Compliance Summit so our listeners can prepare and hopefully attend?
I would love to see everyone out there. Thank you, David. Yeah, it's the next one is actually April 5 through 7. It's going to be in Chicago at the JW Marriott there. It'll be another meeting to discuss these issues, the LEF and what have you, but also just in general reg tech and all things compliance.
Perfect. Looking forward to it. Listeners, get out there. I really thank you, Jeremy, for taking time to be with us, as well as Dan. Thank you for putting this all together. Really appreciate it. And Thomas, good to have you on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, David.
It's a pleasure, David. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you so much. Folks, we've had as our guests on this special podcast talking about reg tech. If you haven't, go back and share this with your audit department, also others, but you can get involved. And I think it's awesome that the state regulators are opening up and inviting you to meetings. Learn more about it. We're going to be putting some links up on the website. And hopefully we'll get those from Jeremy. We get some links up so you know where and how you can learn more about it. But again, our special guests have been Dan Smith of Compliance Ease, Jeremy Windham of the Alabama State Banking Department, as well as Thomas Hennen of Calix Software. That's it for this week's podcast. Thanks so much for listening in. Again, share this with your colleagues. It's important. Regulators out there trying to work with us, so we need to work with them. Be sure you attend these conferences. I want to say a special thank you to all of our guests as well as our sponsors, Black Knight, Open Mortgage, Finastra, Resex, Warehouse Lending, a division of United Bank, as well as the MBA, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, CMLA, Velma, as well as KnowledgeCoop, Vidyard, and AI Assist. If you're interested in advertising with us, go to our website, Lickin' on Lending. You'll see a link up there. You can click on it, and you'll get over to us or get a hold of Paul or Bill Farmicus, who both of which handle are working with us on advertising. Thanks for listening. Be sure to be here next week. We're hopefully going to have Dave Savage on with Ryan Hill, who's a part of Movement Mortgage. They both have podcasts, but we've been all doing it. We did a podcast or an interview, a video interview on David Savage's Mortgage Coach program, and it was really good. And I want to share the same thing with our audience. I could just pull the audio out of that and do it, but I had a couple other areas I wanted to go to. So very excited to have them on, hopefully joining us next week. Also going to be doing more about what you can do to communicate to your audience. That's what we're doing here. It's working, folks. It can be your story as well. Say, well, I'm not good at that. Well, yeah, I didn't think I was either, and we're getting a lot of positive feedback. Many of you probably think I'm not, but I do it because it helps. And, you know, you may not have to be the best at it. Just get out and do it. Provide to your community, people you want to connect with, information to help them. That's the purpose of this podcast. We appreciate you being here with us. Have a great day, everyone. Great Labor Day holiday, and talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.